This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Navage.
I'm Allison Keyes in the Washington Bureau. Better be careful out there if you are in California, where there are everything from blizzard warnings to flash flood warnings. CBS's Bradley Blackburn is out talking to residents.
Near whiteout conditions north of Los Angeles, with residents caught off guard.
We don't get this ever, so this is terrific.
It's snowing!
It is the first time some parts of California have ever dealt with blizzard conditions.
Michigan residents are still dealing with the after effects of one of the worst ice storms in decades. WWJ reporter Mike Campbell is in Detroit.
More than a quarter million DTE Energy customers remain without power since the ice storm hit on Wednesday. DTE Energy Executive Vice President Matt Paul said crews are working as fast and safe as possible.
Being without power isn't fun. In fact, it's extremely difficult. It's fundamental to everyday living. But I commit to you that the thousands of men and women at DTE, along with our in-state and out-of-state partners, will continue to work around the clock until each and every customer is restored.
It is now year two of the Russian war against Ukraine, and the Biden administration is sending a new $2 billion package of military aid. CBS's Dana Jacobson with more.
The costs of the war on Ukraine have been staggering. According to the United Nations, about 19,000 Ukrainian civilians have been killed or injured. But officials acknowledge that the real figure is likely much higher. More than 13 million Ukrainians have been displaced, with more than 8 million fleeing the country as refugees.
Nigeria is holding elections at a pivotal moment for Africa's largest democracy. BBC reporter Yemisi Adegoke is there.
We have not seen any signs of the disruption that are happening in other parts of the country. Everything here has been peaceful. It's been orderly. We have seen some queues because electoral officials were late in some places, but that did not deter voters at all.
There are worries now that with companies requiring workers to return to the office, it might raise rates of employee burnout. Working from home gave employees a better balance between work and their lives. Indiana University professor Rebecca Armstrong.
Reducing flexibility for workers is a loss of power and agency.
Former Vice President Mike Pence says he'll decide by spring whether or not he'll run for president in 2024. He tells NBC News that by then, his family expects to have a very clear sense of its calling. Pence also suggests that he would pledge to support the eventual GOP nominee. This is CBS News.
Now there's a simple, easy, and effective way to clean your nose and protect your health. It's called Navage. Navage.
If you're hankering for a hunk of Wisconsin-grown radio, you've come to the right place. This is Extra Sharp Weekends on Civic Media and on the Civic Media app.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. The federal infrastructure law has been in effect for a year now. Community leaders around Wisconsin are optimistic about badly needed repairs and improvements. Here's Mike Moen.
At the League of Wisconsin Municipalities, Zach Brewing says so far nearly $3 billion in projects have been announced with funding from the law. Most are transportation related, and Brewing says it's badly needed as many areas have backlogs for priorities like road and bridge repairs.
And so by having a real strong federal partnership in the area of infrastructure helps address some of the backlog.
The law will also provide states funding for clean water infrastructure and expansion of high-speed internet. The plan did have some Republican opposition, but has otherwise been hailed by political analysts as a bipartisan achievement. Despite the significance of the law, some of those analysts say it hasn't stayed on the public's radar, especially during the recent election. But supporters are still getting the word out. Megan Rowe is with Opportunity Wisconsin, which has spent the last year educating communities about the benefits of these projects.
Whether we're spending less on car repairs due to updated roads and bridges, having access to safe drinking water or improved mass transit opportunities, this law is a once-in-a-generation investment in our state's infrastructure and competitiveness.
And as more projects are announced, Rowe says it means additional well-paid union jobs for distressed areas. She says the long-term benefits from various improvements should particularly help rural areas and underserved communities. An interactive online map from the White House shows the projects so far are spread fairly evenly across Wisconsin. Mike Moen, Wisconsin News Connection.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell.
Don't you deserve a job you love? Civic Media is preserving hometown radio, broadcasting from main streets across Wisconsin, and we're hiring radio advertising sales professionals to join our rapidly growing network of local radio stations. If you have a connection to your community, prior sales experience, and want to earn an outstanding living where you and your hard work is appreciated, you should apply right now. Find more information on our website, civicmedia.us. Click on the Careers tab.
A progressive voice from Beaver Dam to Kenosha, WAUK 540 AM, always streaming at waukradio.com. You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media. To learn more, go to our website, civicmedia.us.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Cripescast. I'm your host, Charlie Behrens, and this is the podcast where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest. We are brought to you by Jelly Good Soda. And here is this week's episode. Brittany Schmidt.
I had dog crap on my shoe.
Something was smelling. And I
was it smelling?
Yeah, I was trying to figure it out.
I don't know what's more bizarre, the fact that I didn't notice it visually or smellingly, aromically.
Well, there you didn't notice it at all. Yeah, I know. But
we could Google it.
We're not smart. I don't have my phone on me, so.
Wow. That's super, like, healthy of you.
Yes.
Mine is right there.
Yeah.
Okay. When you're going out to dinner with a friend or whatever, and they put the phone upside down on the table, what does that mean to you?
That they're trying to pay attention to dinner.
Okay, what if it's this side up?
I don't really think about it. I think face down is just you're trying to pay attention and be mindful. And then face up is you're a little more open. But it depends. If it's not on do not disturb, then they're not going to get any notifications anyway. But if it's not, then it's like maybe they're waiting to get out of that dinner. Maybe they're waiting for a call.
Give me anything.
Yeah.
Even if it's on do not disturb. Yeah. Somebody please
just
disturb me.
Just a CNN update. They're like, I got to go. Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
There's a storm in Oklahoma. Yeah.
But there are some people that just keep it in their pocket. See, I take it out of my pocket because I'm pretty sure, even though a lot of studies have said otherwise, that it's just radiating whatever's going on in my pocket.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think putting it right there is getting away from the radiation.
Oh, I think it's a millimeter game.
I don't know about that.
Really?
I think we're all pretty
we
screwed.
We could Google it right now and probably not get a definitive answer.
Yeah, they're not going to tell us the truth. Because they want us to stay on our phones.
That's true.
So
that is true.
We are kind of like the test rabbits of the what are these phones doing to us generation.
As a creative, do you think the phone is a plus or a minus?
A minus.
Really? Full on minus.
I think it's a full, for me, I think for a lot of people, it can be a plus because I think a lot of people use it to, you know, research stuff and find inspiration. But I just go on Instagram and compare myself to everyone else. And I'm like, well, it's over. I'm not there yet. So, and then I just go on Reels and I just watch dumb until my brain turns to mashed potatoes. And that's it.
Don't you feel like there is a certain, like you feel hungover really quickly. It's like this. Oh, you were about to say something.
No, just depressed almost.
Is that what that is?
Yeah.
It's, when you watch for a certain amount of time and you just get this, it's almost this cloud, this fog.
Yeah. We're not supposed to be on our phones that much. Like, I just don't think we're supposed to have that much information. We're not supposed to have that much feedback, especially like comments. My comments are insane and like very quickly will make me be like, I should quit, you know, but it's like.
That's so sad to hear.
Yeah, but being a female comic is not easy. So it's I literally just looked at my phone before I left it downstairs and someone was just like, women suck at comedy. And I'm like, what I get every day. And I'm just like, I wish. And then you can't deactivate comments because it screws up the algorithm. So it's like this whole thing. But I was reading, I forget which book, but it was talking about like depressed kids because kids are on their phone all the time coming into like the doctor's office and the doctor won't prescribe medicine. They'll be like, get outside, go for a walk and put your phone down for a couple hours a day. Come back and tell me if you still have the issue. And the issue goes away. Like the depression, the fog, like all that stuff lifts if you just get outside and put your phone down. So I think on a large scale, it's bad for us, but on a personal level for me, it's bad. It's not good. That's why I just have a social media manager run everything and I try not to look at any of it.
Yeah, and you just put all that depression on your social media manager.
She doesn't care because it's not her art.
That's true. You need
art.
That separation. I'm just kidding with you.
Yeah.
I know. See why your phone was left downstairs.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, but that is true. You want to find sort of that that wall of separation from, like, because I'll even do a thing where someone showed me where you could find like your followers and unfollowers, and I really don't like them for that information.
People who unfollow you, but you have to download an app. You have to, like,
you can see, like, on a daily basis.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, that, like, because on a business profile, you can see, but you can't see who specifically is unfollowing you. You can see how many people are unfollowing.
I don't want that app.
Yeah, no, there's an app, and this is a whole nother mental illness where, like, you can see
don't
who unfollows
you. Don't
tell
me
like,
about
the actual
that's
people.
Not possible. That's not
I
possible.
I had this mentally ill comic in LA when I met her. She was like, in the green room, she's like, I'm gonna follow all of you on Instagram and you have to follow me back. And if you follow me and unfollow me, I will know because I have the app that tells me. And I was like, bing, 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 you're unwell. I'm not following you.
Yeah.
So I never followed her. She followed me and then she ended up unfollowing me because she noticed that I never followed her back. And then, no, it gets worse. A year later, I hadn't seen her for like a year, run into her again. She's like, oh my God, hey, how are you? I'm going to follow you on Instagram. Follow me back. And I was like, and I just sat there and I was like, I'm not going to, but I'm not going to tell you that. And then I didn't. And then she followed and unfollowed me 17 times in 1 week. Because she thought I wasn't seeing that she was following me. So she was like waiting for me to follow her back. And then she DM'd me and she's like, hey, just wondering why you're not following me back. And I was like, because you need medical attention. Like, this isn't, this isn't, your relationship with Instagram is not okay.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah, that.
I ruined her life like for 2 weeks. You know, like, I absolutely ruined her life. And then I remember.
And you don't even know each other.
No. And then she booked me on a show and then she forgot she booked me. So I was just like checking in. I was like, hey, oh no, this is what happened. I was getting off Instagram because I take it off my phone often. And like my social media manager won't check DMs. So I just was like, hey, I just want to make sure I'm still on the show. My social media manager is going to be taking, because we didn't have each other's phone number. So it's like, my social media manager is going to be taking over Instagram, whatever. And she was like, I don't know why you're lying to me about having a social media manager. I've asked around and I know that you don't have one.
Oh my
God.
So
if you don't like me, just tell me.
Oh my
God. I was like, what is happening right now? And then I like send her my contract with my social media manager. I'm like, and then I just finally snapped on her. I was like, your relationship with Instagram is insane. You're insane. You can't talk to people like this. Like, I was like, I hope you get the help that you need. And then,
I'm sure that was taken well.
She had followed me, but it took her like
for the 20th time.
Yeah.
Now?
But it took her like 2 months. And then that was the end. I was like, God bless. And then she quit comedy.
She wasn't. But that is sort of the, that's the tough thing, is that like it's tough to just be a comic these days. It's tough to just be a musician these days. It's tough to be just anything.
It's tough to be alive.
Well,
it's tough to just be out in this world. Honestly.
Yeah. But I suppose that's a whole other thing. But I mean, like, whatever your art form is, you then have this other level of promoting it, which is
right, which didn't used to exist. There used to be a company that just did that all for you.
Yeah. But at the same time, it's a give and a take, because now anybody can do it. But
right,
anybody can also fall down that spiral of sort of.
But then there's also some people who aren't ready for success getting it earlier because social media is just like catapulting them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think there's like this interesting thing of like really successful and funny TikTokers who think they can do stand up. Selling out doing stand-up and not knowing how to do stand-up. So it's like this weird thing where it's like there's these really talented stand-ups who don't have the fan base yet, who can't sell out and aren't able to pay their bills doing something they're genuinely good at. And then these TikTokers, who I'm not taking anything away from them, but they're good at something completely different and then think they can do stand-up. And that's another problem.
Yeah. I was kind of one of those people who got like a sold out a show well before I deserved it. I had 12 minutes.
Oh yeah.
12 minutes.
Yeah.
And
good for you.
I know. But I
how did that feel when you had to stand up?
Terrifying, super terrifying. No, but I had 2 months to get like a full hour.
Oh, okay. Well, and that's so, still not a lot of time.
It's not a lot of time. And what I did, I cheated. I'd use the little PowerPoint and okay. I incorporated like it into more of a one man show mm-hmm. to start. Mm-hmm. And then eventually I got good enough at stand up that I sort of, you know, dropped the beginner skis. Do you water ski?
No.
You didn't go?
I have, but.
Yeah. Enough about me. Let's talk about you. Yeah. So you grew up in Wisconsin. Where on the hand? Point it out.
Right there.
Right there.
Like, suburbs of Milwaukee. I went to Mogwanago High School. I grew up in Big Bend, which is... There's 1,100 people there.
Yeah. What most
and
people,
dropping.
And dropping and rapidly. Dropping, yeah. So Alpine Valley, kind of in that
well, sure.
area. Did you go to Alpine?
Ish. Oh, yeah. Dave yeah. Matthews at Alpine.
Oh, you were a DMB fan.
Ooh. No, I wasn't. I was just a fan of Misbehaving.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't really care about the music. I just
You just
liked
like
the
party aspect of mm-hmm. it. Did you start young with the partying?
15, 16. I feel like that's actually pretty old here. I feel like everyone else started at like 10 or 11.
Well, I suppose I tried my first beer when I was like, I don't know, 8 or 9.
Yeah, I think 6 I tried my first beer.
What was it?
I don't remember. It was my dad just always had like a glass of beer at night. And I remember I was like, what is this? And he's like, try it. And
yeah.
Then I was like, I'm going to be an alcoholic. Because I hated the taste of it, but I loved how it made me feel. So that's just... You know, the
even then,
the yeah,
you had enough to change the way you felt.
Yeah, I chugged.
Oh my god,
yeah, your dad like let you chug beer. It. Yeah, he didn't
like,
he was just like, get going, it's yeah. in the family, runs in the family, kid. Yeah,
it's wild. Yeah. We were able to take a sip off the from one of my folks' beers or something, like to try it. Nobody yeah. liked it, so
yeah, no, it tasted awful. And I never actually drank beer. When I started drinking, I drank like sweet, like Parrot Bay rum.
Oh,
but like I would drink an entire bottle. Like when I was 15, I would start with like an entire bottle of Parrot Bay rum.
Whoa. Yeah. Wait. So you started drinking and you'd have a bottle?
Yeah.
Like right away?
Yeah.
You had kind of a, because for people who don't know, you are
yeah, I'm sober now. Yeah.
So you can look back.
Yeah, look back and be like, there was some red flags. No, like my friends, it would be like 6 of us and we would be doing the booze run and everybody would be like, what do you want? And I'm like, I need my own bottle. And then you guys can have your own bottle. So
oh, wow.
It was like they would get one bottle to split between 5 and I would drink and one by myself.
You would do that an entire night?
Yeah.
Oh my. Wow. Yeah.
And I really never like puked. I didn't get sick. I just was...
That's the curse right there.
Yeah.
Because for me, I get sick if I have too much.
Yeah,
quick.
Near the end of my drinking, like late 20s, I started getting sick.
It catches up.
Yeah,
with you.
It got me. But in the beginning, I mean, that was like my whole thing. I could outdrink everyone.
Well,
very impressive.
Yeah, congratulations. Yes, Colleen is. Yes. Oh, is that what it looks like?
Yes.
Parrot Bay rum. What yes. the hell?
Malibu.
Oh, is that? That's what's his face's rum?
Jimmy Buffett.
Jimmy
no,
Buffett.
It's not. He is. No, it's not. It's a whole different brand of trash. But.
Malibu is that worse
than
pineapple
was my first hard lick. Malibu and pineapple. I was at my dad's wedding to my stepmom, and her like gay uncle was like, "Let's get wasted," and I was like, "Love this energy, yeah. take me there." And we drank Malibu and pineapples all night long. And then my sister, who's 2 years older than me, she was like a square, found out I was drunk and got so mad at me. She's like, "Dad, Brittany's drunk. I have to take her home." So my dad's like, "Take her home, whatever." It was me and my friend and my sister and her friend. And she takes me to the police station.
What?
She takes me to the police
Your
station.
Sister.
My sister.
What kind of sister does
she
that?
She was a narc.
Oh my God.
No. And she took me to the police station. She's like, "I'm going to drop you off." She's like, "This is where you deserve to be. You're going to
oh
go
my
to jail."
God. How old is she at this
She's,
point?
Well, I was probably, God, 14 or 15. So she's 16. She could drive 16
okay.
or 17.
This
yeah.
is older sister energy.
This is older sister energy. And then she drove away, ultimately didn't drop me off at the police station. We get back to the house and I'm just like being lippy. I was just being, I was like, yeah. And then she punched me in the face.
Did she? She got you.
She punched me. She knocked me out.
She knocked you out cold?
I mean, not cold, but like I fell on my back and I was like, and then I called my dad and I was like, Heather punched me and I just ruined their wedding. They had to come home from their wedding.
Oh my God.
And that was the beginning of the end. My stepmom hated me. I mean, she didn't like me before that, but she was like, you ruined my wedding. And I was like,
well, you didn't punch yourself. No, I
was like, it wasn't me. It was Heather being a
although,
narc.
You know, some could argue that you could have settled that on your own. You know,
punched her back.
Yeah,
I really don't think I had the skills. Yeah, I was pretty.
And violence isn't the answer.
Yeah,
kids.
It's not. Yeah, it's not the it's answer. Not the and answer. Also, yeah, I feel like I did win that because now when we talk about it, I'm like, well, you're the one who lost your temper and punched me. You know,
that's true. Yeah.
Whenever you look back on violence, if you didn't lose your cool, you win.
True.
Yeah.
Even if you were a full bottle of Parapet deep.
Yeah. Malibu pineapples.
My first beer was Red Dog. Do you ever have Red Dog?
Oh yeah. Wait, no, I had Mad Dog 40/40.
Oh, whoa. Yeah, wow. I was talking beer. You were talking something way different.
Yeah. What even is that?
Mad Dog?
Yeah.
Oh, it's like...
I mean, like, I remember the taste, but what is it considered?
It's a malt liquor of some sort. Liquor, Colleen, yes. What is it?
It says it's fortified wine.
Fortified wine? Oh, my God.
I used to drink Four Locos and chase it with Mad Dog 20 times. Oh, like
Four
the original
Loco.
Four Locos. Do you remember those?
Oh, my buddy, we would call him the Hurricane every time he drank Four Loco because he just turned into a hurricane. Four Loco. There is something that like is banned by the cartel in Four Loco. Like
it
even
was
the
gasoline
cartel
and crack.
Like, yeah,
they had to like redo it. They're like, let's try this again.
Hey, maybe bath salts is not something you should put in this concoction.
Yeah, I remember that.
And
college
it was totally
days.
Marketed to like college underage.
Children.
Yeah.
Yeah. And do you remember Juice? It was called Juice. It was Little John's version of Four Loco.
Like that crunk stuff or whatever.
Yeah, but it was just called Juice. And it was literally like little, I think it was Little John.
Spelled the same?
It might have been J-O-O-S-E, but honestly...
Interesting.
I don't remember. It was called Juice.
Joe's.
I used to have Joe's. Maybe it was just Juice. Yeah, what is it?
It's J-O-O-S-E.
Told you.
Juice.
Yeah, you said.
Interesting. Yeah, you can't just, that's, you can't just market the name Juice because trademark wise. That's why you got to spell it.
You think that's taken?
100%. Well, it's too common.
I don't think you can just take Juice.
Yeah.
And trademark it.
Because I was looking into that.
Trademarking Juice?
No, Old Fashioned.
Oh, okay.
And they're like, yeah, it's
not
going to work.
Yeah,
you can't do that. Yeah. Like, are you sure?
Yeah.
They're like, yeah, we're sure.
Nope, Juice. Oh, man, all that.
Swill. It back.
Swill that I used to just drink.
It's terrible. But so, okay. Well, so you're drinking and you're in Wisconsin. Do you do any like, what's the most Wisconsin thing that, like, you know, from your childhood that you remember doing?
Well, I mean, I went to McGuanago High School. So, like, you know, it was a lot of tractors and farm stuff. Like, I remember going in, like, barns and getting hammered and, like, riding around on tractors.
That's pretty Wisconsin. Or like, don't do that, kids, by the way.
Yeah,
we're not endorsing that.
Nope.
Heavy machinery and alcohol does not mix. Just
things have changed.
Yeah, things. Well, they haven't. But
well, that's true. People's perception of things have changed.
Yeah,
it used to not be so frowned upon. But yeah, I remember like just being in a barn or like being wasted, and there was like chicks, like little chicks, and I would just like pet the little chickens.
Yeah,
I mean that's not something I've done anywhere else.
It's so funny. I would go to my buddy's farm, and we would go on these tractor rides, and we would all be riding in the big old lift, you know, and just as like an elevated seat, you know, and that could have easily dropped, you know.
Yeah, yeah, we all could have died, but
yeah, kid stuff.
We made it.
Kid stuff, yeah.
We made it.
No ice fishing, nothing like that?
I did ice fishing a few times. I remember one time I went ice fishing with my dad and my Uncle Danny. And my Uncle Danny brought one of his girls. My Uncle Danny's wild.
Okay.
Like, he, like, spends a lot of time in Colombia and fishing.
Okay, fishing and, with quotes. Wow.
Fishing in Colombia. And he came with...
Is Danny his real name or using an alias?
No,
right,
Danny's his real name, okay. But he'll never
hear this.
Yeah, he has a flip phone. Like, he's,
cool.
Yeah.
So you're protected.
Yeah,
got
he's
it.
Fine.
Yeah.
He brought his girlfriend, who
another air quote.
Yeah, was just a stripper, and she had just had like, she was so cool. I loved her. She had like green hair and a tongue ring, and her name was Dawn. And she was just like,
real name Dawn.
Yeah, think? I think so. Well, okay. I mean, I don't know.
You don't know.
I don't know. Okay. It was many years ago.
He just met her
and he brought a stripper with us ice fishing, probably at the strip club.
Okay.
I would imagine he took her. Yeah. From work. He captured her.
Well, capture. Okay. Now we're in different territory. So he just brought a stripper ice fishing.
Yeah. And that was the only time I remember ice fishing, because she was great.
I mean,
she was a lot of fun.
Okay. She was wearing more than what she would wear to work. She was more than work attire.
Yeah,
she was well comfortable.
Yeah, she was great.
Did she tell you that she was a stripper, or did Danny, or did your dad?
She was saying she's a dancer. And my dad's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like this. And she's like, no, I just dance. And yeah, I remember. And then later I was like, what happened there? And my dad was like, yeah, that was a stripper.
Oh, your dad then told you.
Yeah. Yeah. Later.
Wow.
Because I liked her so much. I kept bringing her up. I'm like, where's that dancer Dawn? I love her. He's like, she's probably wrapped around a pole right now and not a fishing pole.
Yeah. Yeah. That's funny. Wow. I mean, so interesting. Yeah. So I didn't expect. Did you guys catch fish?
Yeah, I think so.
What did Dawn catch?
I don't remember.
Yeah. Maybe a sunfish.
I don't know, the dawn. Yeah, you know, sun, I do not remember. Dawn.
There's something there. There's a joke there. What did you always want to be a comedian?
No.
How'd you get into this whole deal? How'd you get going down the wrong tracks here?
Yeah.
You know.
Honestly, well, when I moved to LA, I went to go visit a friend in Arizona, and I got a DUI.
Uh-huh.
And then I had to go to jail for that DUI.
Oh, wow. They're very strict about it.
Very strict. They have zero tolerance. It's not like Wisconsin.
Wisconsin has all too lenient laws, largely.
Yeah, it's just like a rite of passage.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
It's terrible here.
Not good. Way worse in Arizona, though, especially coming from Wisconsin, because I was like pretty fresh to LA. So I had been in Wisconsin like 6 months prior. And when I got my DUI, I was like, I'm going to be fine. And I wasn't fine. And I had to go to jail for 30 days. And I was like, pretty depressed. And then I worked at an ad agency, and the guy that I sat across from was a strategist, but he also did comedy on the side.
Yeah.
And he was like quitting to do comedy full time. And he was like, you're really funny. And he's like, I know you're like going through it right now. Cause I was going to jail at night to go to sleep. Like, he's like, I know you're going through it right now. He's like, if you can't afford therapy, you should try comedy.
That's what he said.
Yeah. He's like, because it's like therapy, but it's cheap. It's free.
It's free.
Yeah. So
and that's what signed you up.
Like, he literally quit and he went to Afghanistan to perform for the troops. And he called me every week for like 6 weeks until I finally signed up for like this writing class. And it was the best thing I ever did.
Which writing class was it?
Jerry Katzman's comedy writing class. It's not 6 weeks. Maybe it's 12. It's like very intense. And it's a total trust fall because you just tell this guy everything about yourself, like the things that scare you the most, the things, you know. And at the time I was still drinking, so I didn't like know I was an alcoholic yet. And like just like all these things where he then like kind of helps you navigate. Like it's like we start here with the easy stuff to talk about, like what's funny about being from Wisconsin is, you know what I mean? And then like we get into the darker stuff, the going to jail and all that
stuff.
You
know what's funny is like, I'm actually super fascinated in this. Now, was this a group class?
Yeah. So there's 10 of us in the class.
And would you say this in front of everybody? You're like deep, dark secrets, or is this one-on-one?
No. So you write it all down.
Yeah.
Like it's the assignment before you start the class is to answer all of these questions. Yeah. And it's intense. It's like pages and pages of questions. Mm-hmm. And he's like, the more honest you are with me, the more successful we're going to be. So I just was like, I had nothing to lose. I was like, here's everything. And then he just like guides you, you know, kind of through it. He teaches you how to write premises, how to write act outs, you know, kind of how to find your voice. And then at the end of it, you have, you know, anywhere between a 5 and 7 minute set. And then the like finale of the class is getting on stage at the haha.
Okay. The haha. How about that?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And then you film it. And then if you're any good, you can send that film to bookers. And it actually very quickly started going well for me. Like after that class, like I got a lot of things really quickly. And then
I want to get to when you got things right. But before that, I just want to talk about this class. Was there like some sort of, I took this Meisner class. in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. And for people who don't know, it's like where you kind of, I don't know, repeat stuff. That's sort of the basics of like, I am wearing a red coat. You are wearing a red coat, like with a partner. But then he could sort of broke that down more. And like, he would be kind of like emotionally abusive to you on stage, like in front of everybody, to sort of elicit some sort of emotional response. Was there anything like that in that class? Or was he pretty kind?
The emotional abuse was psychological abuse.
I don't know the difference.
Okay. If you don't bring it, like, he's not going to embarrass you in that way, like try and embarrass you in front of people.
Yeah.
But if you don't bring it, like if you don't write well, if you don't dig deep, if you don't do the things that he tells you to do, he kind of is like, why are you wasting everyone's time?
Oh, okay.
You know what I mean? And by the way, that psychological abuse has stuck with me my entire career because I still write with him. Like, I still will do writing sessions with him where I spend like 3 months. And it's like, if I don't show up with jokes, he's going to be mad at me. And that like continues to make me produce.
That's great. And, do you think, are there a lot of comics in LA that go to him? Because I've also heard that a lot of comics be like, oh, never do a writing class. I've done writing classes. But
every comic I know that I work with and that I respect has done a writing class.
Isn't that interesting? I must be thinking of people at open mics who said that.
Or just like very old school people who didn't even have the option for a writing class.
Yeah.
Where it's like, that's like a very old mentality. I can't think of a single person who wouldn't be like, yeah, if there's a cheat code, take it. Because like, just even like structurally, how to write a joke or what's going on, there is like a little bit of magic, but you can teach that magic,
right?
Rather than going to 3 years worth of open mics, because that's what I equate that class to. It's like, you can do open mics for 3 years and figure it out, or you can take this class for 3 months or 12, whatever it is, and figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's like, if somebody knows this and you, why not tap into that knowledge? And also, you learn a lot of bad habits at open mics, I find.
Also, they're just the worst in LA. I mean,
it's suck.
All comics. Nobody wants to laugh at you. It's the darkest, loneliest group of people. I never did an open mic.
I did a ton. I did Fourth Wall, where you pay $5.
Yeah.
I paid to have people just stare at me like this and read their jokes as I was telling jokes.
Right.
I do think that made me okay with bombing horrifically.
Yeah, you're going to, sure.
You're going to do that anyway.
Yeah, you're going to have to figure that out. If you're going to be a comic, you have to figure that out anyway.
Hey folks, keep her moving to Civic Media every Saturday and Sunday at noon for the Cripescast with me, Charlie Behrens.
We've been out here all day. You've had 5 or 6 beers and only one fish.
Knucklehead CBD and Vapes is now online at knuckleheads.shop. Step into your favorite smoke shop without leaving your home. Find grinders, papers, Delta 8, and more, all from your computer or phone. With free shipping on all orders over $50, you'll be sure to find exactly what you like. You can also order for in-store pickup, so there's no wait. Knucklehead CBD and Vapes.
Visit Knuckleheads Milwaukee at 2949 North Oakland Avenue.
Order online today at knuckleheads.shop.
It's easy to listen to your favorite local radio station anytime. Download the Civic Media app from the Apple or Google Play Store, then listen live or whenever you want from anywhere for free.
Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian.
I'm really trying hard not to go insane from the mind screw that is this situation with I was going to say the GAB, but now it's the WEC, which was audited by the LAB, and then it's now screwed up by the GOP, and we're all SOL. Good for us. Congratulations.
Look at all those acronyms. Yeah.
We're the winners.
Tune in for Dueling Tangents every weekday at 2.
Governor Tony Evers, Tim Michaels, said you had gone, quote, full woke. Dr. Jill Underlie said that somebody who says that has no idea what we're doing in schools to make sure kids feel safe.
We want to make sure all kids feel supported. Tim Michaels, we don't teach CRT in our schools. You got to come to the present century here, Tim, and be cognizant of what actually goes in the schools. My guess is you've never been in a public school in Wisconsin.
Up North News Radio with Pat Krylo airs at its new time from 6 to 8 a.m. weekdays across Civic Media.
We stand on the shoulders of women who came before us.
Women who fought for their own financial futures.
And now it's our turn.
Join us. Visit WeSaySaveIt.org and take control of your financial future by saving for retirement.
A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the KripesCast on Civic Media. If you're just tuning in now, I'm talking with comedian Brittany Schmidt. You've had some interesting bombs. Do you want to talk about those or
no? Sure, I don't care. Yeah, why not? Any other trauma you want to take?
No. I just, a lot of times when I have comics up here, I've had some really bad bombs myself. So yeah. I just
How about you tell me about yours first?
Okay. Okay. This was like one of my first times going up. I always thought I absolutely crushed at my brother's wedding, doing the best man speech. Mm-hmm. My other brothers also gave a best man speech, and I think I had the better one.
Right.
Yeah. So I was riding high, and I went to this open mic, and I wrote everything down.
From the speech? Were you reading the speech?
No. No, I just wrote a 5-minute set, and I went up there. I was like, this is going to murder. I was listening to other people go up there, not getting any laughs. I was like, I'm so smart. You know that feeling too. And now if I ever feel that feeling, I'm like, shut
up. Yep.
That is not the feeling you want. And then I got up there and I started doing the whole thing. Crickets off the top. Forgot 2 minutes of my whole thing. So the beginning and the end didn't connect. The only laugh I got the whole time was something I made up on stage.
Yeah.
Didn't go back. This was on Venice Boulevard in the back of some coffee shop. So it was outside. Mm-hmm. And so it was not a good venue to begin with. Outside is not always the best. And I didn't get back up on stage for 6 months.
Love that.
Yeah. Super sad, so Charlie.
That is the, for me, that's the tell that I'm going to bomb. So the first time I was ever headlining, I was at the House of Comedy in Minnesota at the Mall of America.
Oh, yeah. I've played that. I've done that so many times.
Oh, my God. The venue itself, the people that run it are great. They're wonderful people. The venue itself, it's like you could fly hot air balloons in there. The ceilings are so high, which is not great for comedy.
I didn't even notice that.
They're so high.
Okay, that makes sense.
Okay.
Yeah.
So all of the laughs, I mean, for people who don't know comedy, you want low ceilings, you know, acoustics to be, anyway, in your favor. So I brought this person on the road with me. Do you know Mateen Stewart?
Not personally.
Okay. He was my feature, and I love Mateen. He's very talented. But what I did was, because I wasn't, like, I didn't have a big following yet, I hired a local comic to bring people. I was like, you need to fill the place.
Oh, wow.
And
smart.
Yeah. And she was like, yes, absolutely. Like, I'll bring all my friends, blah, 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 whatever. Great. So I get there and there's like 80 people there. That's plenty for me. Like, I'm like, that's great. Okay. That's fine. Whatever.
That's like 300 capacity, 400
capacity. Yeah. So it's not.
It's a bigger room.
Yeah, it is a bigger room. Yeah. But it was like, I was thrilled because I'm like, if I would have done this on my own, there'd be 6 people here. So.
Oh, yeah. That's not fun.
She did her job. She brought all of the people. And she goes up and she does fine.
Yeah.
And then Mateen goes up and crushes. I mean, just murders. And I was just like,
I'm getting a feeling in my stomach just thinking about this. And you're sitting back at that kitchen.
I'm just sitting back waiting. There. No. And I'm like, well, if he's doing well, I'm going to crush.
Oh,
yeah. I am an egomaniac. And I'm also drinking Diet Cokes. And I think at the time I wasn't drinking any caffeine. So my energy was just like a hummingbird.
Yeah.
But in my head, I'm like, I'm going to kill. When I say I got up there and I bombed for 45 minutes straight, and it was just, I was like, what's happening here? And like, for those of you who don't know my comedy, I'm very dark and I'm very dirty, and they're just all looking at me like stunned. The show's over. Mateen and I are outside afterwards. I didn't even want to be out there, but he's like, you have to be a pro and just come out and say whatever, hello to people. And everyone's saying to Mateen, they're like, Mateen, you are you're so funny. You're so great. You're da da da. And like, this woman came up to me and she's like, you're so pretty.
Oh my God.
I was like, the reason I was doing with this show was because I was getting ready to film my special.
No.
And I had a moment of like, I should quit. I don't think I can do this. And like, it was just like such a trigger for me too. Cause I remember in high school, like I wasn't popular in high school and I was on the volleyball team. And I remember our coach was like making us do this circle where they're like, go around and say 2 things nice about the person to the right of you. And the person to the left of me was like, Brittany's really pretty.
Oh my
God.
And
then she's like, just like say something else, like not superficial. And she's like, That's it. She's just
Oh, wow.
And I was like, like, it's like an actual trauma when people say
trauma
that.
Trauma shovel. This.
Yeah. So it was horrible. And then the opener, who's very sweet, like, was just like, hey, do you want to like grab lunch tomorrow? And everything in me said no. Like, I don't want to. But I was like, you know what? Just be whatever. Just show up, go to lunch, whatever. Yeah,
it's very Midwest nice of you.
Yeah. And I was talking to her and she's like, yeah, so I brought my whole Bible study to the show. That's who the crowd was.
Could have been useful information.
You should have told me that.
Wow.
Immediately. So it's like 90 people from her Bible study. Yeah. And I have like all these filthy jokes. And I'm just like, they were just praying for me.
Yeah, they were praying for me.
And I'm like, that would have been useful. Immediately. So at least there was a reason it was so bad, but it doesn't make it any less horrific. It was
that's tough.
But now it was Mateen's birthday show two days ago at whenever, I don't know what time is, but he brought me on stage. He's like, this next comic is very pretty.
That's hilarious. Super
it's
funny.
Like a running joke with us now. Yeah.
That's awesome. Wow. Yeah. Well, I'm sorry to hear that, but the special, so you start comedy kind of later than I would say most comedians. How old were you when you started?
23.
No, that's pretty much
23, but I did 23 to 25 and then I got in a relationship and I was like, I'm happy and I have nothing to talk about now. And I quit comedy for like 2 years and then I came back. So I think that was difficult because then I came back in like 2018, 2019, and then 2020 was the pandemic. So,
you know, it's been kind of a wild thing, but you've had so many great opportunities and you've had so many, like you've done a lot of, like you did Don't Tell and you, had the, like a bunch of clips kind of blow up. So, I mean, yeah. how did it go from like, you know, being sort of a comedian, doing the mics, doing the work, doing the comedy
not
thing to
mics.
Kind of getting the, or not doing the mics, but doing the class.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You just never did any mics. You just got booked on shows right away.
Yeah. So after I did that class, like I said, I got very lucky. Like there was just like a few things that happened where it was like moving.
Mm-hmm.
But so it's like I quickly like opened for Bobby Lee. I quickly like started getting booked on shows with like Theo Vaughn and Damon Wayans and like all these people where it was just like it was kind of happening for me. But I was also still drinking and I was kind of treating it like a party, like not a career.
Mm.
I remember being drunk in a green room once and one of my friends coming because she was so excited about the lineup and who was on it. And the fact that I was on it was like insane. And she's like, why are you drunk at work? And I was like, this isn't work. You know what I mean? Like I wasn't, cause I had a day job in advertising, so I wasn't taking it seriously. So I think that got in the way a little bit. So I think like taking that break, even though I regret it a little bit, like I got sober in that break and then I was able to come back and approach it with like a seriousness that I didn't have before that. So then once I felt like I was behind, I felt like I had to make up for lost time. Mm. So I very quickly was like, okay, these jokes are old, but they're good, but I want to burn them. So I want to film a special.
Yep.
And then I remember my manager at the time, I was like, hey, I think I want to film a special. Cause like I said, I used to work in advertising. So I know a lot of people that can get done.
Yep.
And like, it wouldn't be a ton of money and they would make it look really good. So I told him, I was like, I want to film a special. And he was like, I don't think you should. He's like, I think you should wait for like Netflix or Comedy Central or someone to find you. And I was like, okay. And I kind of took that. And then I talked to my friends in Austin, who have a production company, and my other friend who's a director. And they're like, we can get, like, let's just do it. Like, if you want to do it, let's just do it. And so then I called my manager back and I was like, so I'm doing this, like, with or without you. And then my manager was like, oh, yeah, amazing. Like, all gung ho about it. You know, wanted to EP it. And he was great. He was very helpful. But like, mm-hmm. It was one of those things where I had to like not listen to his advice and listen to my gut. Cause yeah, I was like, I'm ready to get this. I'm ready to get these jokes out, you know?
Yeah. I think it's just tough to do that. Listen to your gut sometimes, in this sort of business. So.
Yeah, but you have to,
yeah.
Cause otherwise people will just tell you like, it's like, I don't know, you know, what's best for you creatively. I knew those jokes were cooked. I also think I kind of knew like a lot of those jokes were about being married and like my was not working there. So oh, I kind of was like, working, yeah, I just was like, I got to get these
you
out.
You got to get it. Yeah. Get them out while it still makes sense.
Well, it still makes sense. And then, you know, obviously we were like going through our separation and divorce when the editing and the clipping and like all that stuff was happening. I was like, oh, this is just horrible foreshadowing. Yeah. Like all of the jokes are about how badly I want to be single. So that was brutal. But putting it out was great. And like, yeah, I mean, it went way better than I would have ever imagined.
And then you kind of see, is that the point where you see your social media following jump from like whatever the standard, I have a social media account to like a substantial following? Was that kind of off of those or what?
Yeah, in the last, I mean, in 2022, it went from 20,000 followers to 190.
Oh, wow.
And that's all from those clips.
Yeah. And that's sort of, so like for other comics out there who are like, I know I've got like great material, but I don't know how to get my stuff shot, mm-hmm. you know? Like what do you say to that? Like what do you do?
I mean, just it's so easy now. Like even, you know, clips from iPhones are going
viral.
So it's like just bring your iPhone to your show, shoot your set and clip it up. It's just so you can do it all on iMovie. It's so easy. And then if you have money and you want to shoot a real special, like there are people who will get it done. Like I remember when I was talking to my manager, he's like, it's going to take like 90 to 100,000 to get this done. And I was like, no, you're talking to the wrong people. Because like for me, I worked in advertising and like all those people work on like multi-hundred-thousand-dollar, million-dollar campaigns. Like I used to work with people that worked at Apple, but they're not like creatively satisfied, satiated. So they know how to make something look beautiful and they want those side projects. So it's just about like finding and knowing the right people that are going to make it look good enough, you know?
Yeah. I think too, like when I was first in LA, I was like trying to network with like people who had like were successful or whatever, but that was like the wrong kind of networking. I think it's good to network, but network to find other creatives that you can like make stuff with. So I think.
Yeah. I think that's a big lesson. It's like, nobody's going to give you anything. It doesn't matter how much they believe in you or how much they say they are going to give you something. That was like a big lesson when my special came out too. I can't tell you how many of those big dog comics were like, I'm going to have you on my podcast. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And when my special came out, it was just, even some of my closest friends just like, sorry, I can't have you on. Joe Rogan's on this week. And I'm like, all righty. But it kind of made it more satisfying when it took off on its own, because then I was like, I have nobody to thank, you know what I mean, except for the team that shot it, and you know,
right,
that's it,
right? Yeah, it's that's always interesting too, because there's a lot of yes in LA and like, oh, you're amazing, yeah, let's get you to do this. There's a lot of talk.
Oh my god, everybody loves everything you do always, but they're not gonna help you until you're above them.
Yeah.
Until you crawl above them, then they're like, we should collab on this. I'm like, oh yeah, because it's helpful to you now.
Yeah.
So no.
Yeah, it's tough. Yeah, it's like, or it's good to think about that when maybe you are, you know, seeing people for like what their talent is, not for what their like social media numbers are, you know?
I think it's hard to differentiate for a lot of people.
We're in like that Black Mirror thing where like your follower number is like above your head.
Yes.
You know?
Where you're not talented until you're validated. Like 100%. Again, just last year, I saw like I finally hit a point where I don't have to reach out to people to get booked on stuff. People reach out to me.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things where it's like, you know, bookers, God bless their soul, like their clout chasers too, like they need you to have numbers to help promote the show, to do this, to do that, where it's like, you're not, even though I'm telling the same jokes or similar jokes and I'm the same comic now, people think I'm worth having on their shows when I wasn't before.
I do also want to say though, there are a lot of great comics who like and great creators who like, they may have a huge following, but they're down if you have a good idea. There's a lot of those too. I don't want to say it's all the one way. But yeah, so like, okay, so you kind of have, you have a lot of material out there. You know, you're doing the clip game and everything like that on your social media. Where do you like want to take this? Do you have an idea in your head of where to take this, to be like, oh yeah, I made it? Or do you already feel like, oh yeah, I made it?
No. I love stand-up. I always want to do stand-up, but I want to do movies. I mean, I'm a writer and a screenwriter and I want to do that stuff.
Yeah.
It seems just more fun and more stable, and the people you get to hang out with just seem a little more, I don't know. Comics are very dark.
Yeah.
Very dark group of people. And I'm a pretty dark person, but like, it's just a lot on the soul to like have to like hang out. And like, you know, I love comics, but like, I remember listening to Will Ferrell on the Dax podcast, Dax Shepard's podcast. And he was like, why did you never do stand-up? You're so funny. And Will Ferrell was like, have you ever hung out with stand-up comics? He's like, they're the worst group of people in the world. And I remember hearing that when I didn't believe that. And then like, I think just the more that's come out about people that I thought I knew and like things that have happened in our industry where I'm just like, this is kind of dark. You know, I would like to be in a more controlled environment on set shooting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you think that is about comics, though? Is it they're all using it for therapy? Is it that?
Maybe. I think, yeah, you do have to be a certain level of like unwell to seek that kind of validation, or something has to have gone kind of wrong.
Yeah, I think so. Maybe to a degree. I mean, I don't know. It's such an interesting art form, I guess, in that like it, you're doing it. It's not like you're with a band. You know, playing,
right?
You know, I mean, you're doing this by yourself, and so you almost take every laugh personally.
Yeah,
if you're doing it wrong, I suppose you can't do it that way, but I suppose it's hard to avoid that.
Yeah,
and when they don't laugh, maybe that hits where you're already wounded, because you're right up there for a reason, right?
Right,
because you're trying to get some sort of validation, maybe.
Yeah. You're trying to fix something, I think. And it's like, you know, there's this beautiful thing with stand-up where you can heal yourself and you can heal others at the same time.
Well, yeah.
But then if they don't like your jokes, then everybody's just a little more injured.
Yeah.
after my set, at least. Everyone's a little more sad.
Yeah. Yeah. So you've written a very funny film, which and very heartfelt and very... I read your screenplay. It's awesome. And that kind of goes into your life. Is semi-autobiographical, would you call it?
We'll call it semi. We're going to have to say that it's not. We're going to have to say I just made that all up. I mean, it's not a true story, but there's like a lot of true components.
Right.
Yeah.
And how has sort of your personal life influenced your art, I guess? And do you think that when comedy is done right, you find something in yourself that though so personal and so unique to you is universally relatable? Is that kind of the mission?
Yeah. All of my comedy is painfully true. Like obviously I'll add little things to make it funnier or whatever, but most of it all just comes from my experience, which I think, you know, makes it great when people can relate to it, and then also difficult when people don't like it because it's like more personal. Whereas I think when you do more like Seinfeld type comedy where you're like the bathroom doors, da da da, like if people don't like it, who cares? You know what I mean? It's an observation about a bathroom door. But
as someone who does a lot of that kind of stuff, I can tell you it still hurts.
It does it?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Yeah. Just
really
solidarity. No, I'm
feel
kidding.
Like it
I'm
probably
joking.
Hurts. Obviously, it hurts the ego, but it doesn't hurt the soul.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Where I'm like, when I'm talking about, like, I talk about my mom's suicide and like that kind of stuff. And like, when people aren't down to laugh with me, I'm like, I'm trying to make the best out of a bad situation. So it sucks that you're not helping me.
Yeah, right.
But then also, you know, I have to be mindful. It is like such a tricky thing to talk about. So it's, my stand up and my art, it's all kind of like a tightrope, but it's like I want to talk about things that are true to me and my experience because that's all I have to offer.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's like different from anyone else is me and what I've been through.
Yeah. And that is such an interesting thing because some people are have either experienced that in their life or they have, you know, sort of these preconceived things about that.
Mm-hmm.
And really anything dealing with life and death and religion and all that, it kind of scares people a lot.
Yeah.
And they're not like willing to laugh at it.
It's traumaty. It's like a completely different thing.
Is that what you would call it?
Yeah.
Like what? Like your main,
I wouldn't say all of it is because obviously some of it's very dumb and, you know, talking about things that are a lot lighter than that. But I would say with my new hour, I have 15 minutes that can really scare people.
Mm.
You know,
do you always aim for a tight 15 that can scare the crap out of someone?
No, it's just I know when I'm heading into that part of my set
where
I might lose everyone.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I have to like warn him. I'm like, here we go.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm like, if you thought that was bad, it gets, you know,
right.
It's going to get worse.
Yeah.
But it's beautiful. It's like more beautiful than when the people love it. Like, cause it is like a healing thing where I've had people come up to me and be like, I lost someone to suicide in this joke. Like I rewatch it and I rewatch it. You know what I mean? Where I feel like it has the power to heal the people that are open to be being healed.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely does. You know, it's a thing that someone can send you that clip or whatever. They can send it to you if you're going through that situation. And,
right.
Yeah. And that's a super great thing in that respect. Do you think, let's say you become, your movie takes off, which I think it will.
Yeah.
You know, I think it'll get produced and do very well. If that happens, will stand-up comedy always be a part of your life?
Yes.
Why?
Because there's nothing quite like it.
The thrill of the bomb.
Well, I'm an addict. Like, don't forget that.
Still
and I
addict.
Have nothing left. Okay. You know, I'm an addict who doesn't drink, who doesn't do drugs. Yeah. And there is no high in the world like stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
It's great, it is the best. And then when it's bad, it's the worst. It's truly an addiction. Like, it's, you know, it's like both sides of the coin where like when it's great, it's the best. It is the best. Like I just had two shows at the Hollywood Improv Sunday night and they were both back to back just killer shows. And I was like, this is it.
Yeah.
Like and then when I, you know, don't do well, I'm like, well, I should get out of here.
Yeah. how do you deal with the, you know, you're going to continue doing it. How do you deal with the rejection, the bombs, the bad jokes, the terrible comments that, you know, people will give you? How do you deal with that?
Well, the comments I just try to avoid because I realize, you know, a lot of people sitting there, I can't imagine a world where I would ever go on anybody's thing where they're putting themselves out there and making art and I would say something negative because it's so brave to even try that. Like, I feel like if you're in a position where you're willing to take someone else down, you just need to go make your own art.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? That's just a person who's stuck, who feels bad about what they're doing with their life, who wants you to feel bad about what you're doing with your life.
Right.
So it's like that. I try and look at it that way all the time. Sometimes it gets me, like sometimes someone will say something that's very poignant and I'm like, they got a point. You know what I mean?
When they hit you with the thing you already know.
Yes.
I
or
know.
It's something that's inside of me where they just find it and they hit it. It's like my mom. You know
what I
mean?
That.
Like, it's just like a sniper. Like, she knows like the one thing.
The weakness.
Yes.
You can see right through
you. Yes. So like when someone's like, women aren't funny or stop talking about sex or whatever, I'm just like, oh my God, shut up. Like whatever. But that stuff, I just, you know, like I said, I have a social media manager, so I try not to look at it too much. And she doesn't care. She doesn't, it's not personal to her if that stuff comes up. But when I bomb, it's less devastating than it used to be. You know, I'm more centered. I'm more like, this is just part of the job. I'm a pro. We have good days and we have bad days.
Meditate, yoga, anything that helps.
Meditation, transcendental meditation changed my life.
Yeah, I do that too.
I'm just like,
I'm
just kind of like, whatever. We just got to keep going.
Yeah.
It's just a long game. You just keep going and then something happens. That's the other thing. I'm not married to like how this career unfolds. Like, I'm just excited to see what happens.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's really good.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for coming on. Where can people find you and everything like that?
My social media manager is on Instagram.
Okay, good.
At Brittany Schmidt, BrittanySchmidt. No D in my last name. I took all those in college.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Well, we'll end on a punchline here. We'll end on a punchline. And then you'll get some offended emails by that too.
I can't wait.
Yeah.
Emails. Cool. Who has my, are you going to give out my email address? You're like, this reset the hate mail.
I'll forward you any ones that we get.
Okay, great. I can't wait.
I'll forward them to your social media man.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
I get bad emails sometimes too. It's okay.
All right. Well, congrats. Yeah. That means you're doing something.
No, cool. And you are the first person to be in what might be our podcast studio. We're not sure yet, right, Kelly?
Oh boy.
Yeah. Anyway,
Kelly's gonna get.
Do you like
ulcer.
These couches? These are from Nana's basement.
Yeah, they're nice.
They're ranch oak.
Great. I have no idea.
I've just
what
always
means.
Been told that about these.
Yeah.
I don't even know if that's like a good thing or a bad thing.
Well, I know oak is good. It's strong and it lasts forever.
Are they comfortable?
Yeah. Great.
Cool. Because it's
kind of giving like Green Bay Packer vibes.
Yeah, a little bit.
Get a yellow pillow.
Yeah, that would be great. Actually, yeah. I should do that. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. All right, folks, that is it for another episode of the Cripescast. Thank you all for listening. Big thanks to Brittany for coming on. Make sure you check out her special on YouTube. Make sure you get her book. Make sure you follow her on Instagram. That's at Brittany Schmidt, and TikTok as well.
She's at It's Brit Brit on Twitter, and she's on Facebook, Brittany Schmidt as well.
Nice, and you can also, she's on tour. She's got some tour dates coming up, BrittanySchmidt.com. And then, yeah, and also Cripescast, at Cripescast. Follow us on all the platforms.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always.